Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's March 27, 47 BC, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Aria, Rebecca, and Ali, the Retrospectors.
Sibling rivalries can be the very worst, especially when those siblings are also husband and wife, and even more so when those siblings are co-rulers of a country, as were Cleopatra and her husband slash brother slash co-pharaoh Ptolemy XIII, until today in history in 47 BC, when Julius Caesar intervened to put his lover and ally Cleopatra on the Egyptian throne.
Yeah, and I think we imagine this liaison between Caesar and Cleopatra as the meeting of two legendary, powerful leaders. But in fact, Caesar had only just assumed power in Rome less than 2 years before, after a very bloody civil war, and was by no means secure in his position. And Cleopatra had had actually a very similar experience. She had only been on the co-throne, if you like, for 2 years before being forced out. And she'd spent almost as much time trying to get it back. You know, she was only 18 or so when her father, Ptolemy XII, died. He had decreed that she should co-rule with the then 11-year-old Ptolemy XIII, but like most 18-year-old big sisters asked to share with their 11-year-old brother and also marry him, the evidence suggests that she shut him out almost immediately. You can imagine, you know, like, I don't know what the comparison would be, your younger brother trying to get the TV controls or something and just slamming the door in his face. This angered very much his adult regents, who had, you know, they really planned to use him as a puppet to get control themselves. You know, this just made them extremely, and there followed a slightly funny power struggle about whose name would go on decrees first, who could mint the most coins with their faces on. But finally, Ptolemy's advisors had incited a revolt to depose Cleo from the power sharing arrangement.
Yes, that's the crucial thing, isn't it? She had been deposed just before this day. So she was in exile when she made her bid for Julius Caesar. It was her attempt to claw back the throne, and sometimes is positioned by historians and commentators as Cleopatra having had ruthless ambition, you know, desperate to be powerful. It's like, no, she was fighting for her life. Because, yeah, she was in exile now, but at some point she was going to get drowned or poisoned or speared. Because as long as she lived, there was a chance that she had an entitlement to that throne. And all of those powerful advisors around her brother and her brother getting older might well have just seen her off. So it was important for her to get her way back to the throne. And she saw her strategy in Julius Caesar, who had arrived in Egypt looking for money. Actually,
yeah, I mean, Caesar was also pursuing his military rival Pompey, who had sought refuge in Egypt. And, you know, really, as you say, Ollie, he unwittingly became entangled in this Egyptian family feud. But yes, he was recognizing the strategic importance of maintaining stability in the Nile Valley, which was a crucial ally with just this significant agricultural wealth that he also wanted. And so he took up residence in Alexandria's royal palace, and he called then for a peace conference to mediate the conflict between the two warring siblings, Cleopatra and Ptolemy XIII. But Ptolemy's forces prevented Cleopatra's return to Alexandria, prompting her to devise what is frankly a harebrained scheme. So, at least according to legend, Cleopatra convinced her servant Apollodorus to conceal her in a carpet, or as some sources suggest, a sack for bedclothes, which he then presented to the 52-year-old Roman general, and she came flopping out of this carpet or sack.
We've all seen Carry On Cleopatra.
Right. And then cue the start of their relationship.
And can I just say, carpet was a Victorian translation. It wasn't a carpet. I mean, I think you need to think of it more as sexy lingerie. She's emerging from some flowing white Egyptian cloth. This is her big seduction.
Some scratchy rug.
Yeah. I don't think... because also, he wouldn't have been in the habit, Caesar, of unrolling things without knowing what was in them. Because again, he could get speared to death at any moment, couldn't he? So, I mean, I think it was fairly obviously a woman when it entered his bedchamber.
The story goes that Ptolemy and their younger sister, Asinue, actually walked in and saw her in Caesar's bed. You know, they'd come for this peace conference to negotiate who was going to rule Egypt. And then they're like, oh, I think she may be, you know, one step up on us at this point. Which was very upsetting, particularly to Ptolemy, because he thought he had carried out this masterstroke that was going to make Caesar his ally, which was that when Pompey had arrived in Egypt, he was met by a kind of what he thought was a welcoming committee sent by Ptolemy, which included a bunch of former Roman legionaries. These were called the Gabiniani, allied with Ptolemy the 13th against Cleopatra. When Pompey disembarked, they literally stabbed him to death and beheaded him on the beach as he arrived. And understandably, Ptolemy's faction thought this would get Caesar on board when he arrived with his 3,000 soldiers.
How to win over Julius Caesar. Let's behead his mate.
Stab his enemies to death. Well, this was the thing, is that Pompey was really a friend and an enemy at the same time. Yeah. He had been
frenemy,
a
that's
former,
a good word, isn't it? That is
he
what
was.
He
was a frenemy. Yeah. Mm. And he was also Caesar's son-in-law. You know, he'd been married to Caesar's daughter. Pompey was a former Roman consul and a very respected general, and he had been unilaterally executed by a foreign power, denied a dignified death due to a Roman citizen and proper funeral rites. And also, Pompey was enormously popular with the army in Rome and the people as well. And Caesar didn't want to kill him. He wanted to make peace in a sort of big splashy way with Pompey and secure his support to shore up his new regime. So actually, Caesar was furious and Ptolemy had very much got off on the wrong foot. And
well, he had to make a show of being furious. There must have been a part of him that was like, well, that's convenient. That has resulted
in problem.
Yeah. Well, the upshot of Caesar's intervention here was really to basically establish an armistice between the two warring siblings. But it didn't last long, and pretty much civil war broke out almost immediately.
Yeah, it was a good plan, but unfortunately nobody followed it. Instead, the Egyptian army surrounded Caesar's encampment in Alexandria, where he remained besieged for 5 months. Eventually, the Roman ships successfully overpowered the Egyptian fleet in the harbour, which then enabled Caesar to break out his army from Alexandria, and they seized the strategically important island of Pharos. But in the chaos, Ptolemy and Cleopatra's younger sister, Arsinoe, managed to slip out of Caesar's grasp and assumed control of the Egyptian army, which launched a counterattack on the island so fierce that Caesar had to strip off his sword and armor to swim to safety. He held onto the island, but he no longer held onto the bridge to Alexandria, which put him in a very dangerous position indeed. At this point, a delegation of Egyptians approached Caesar and offered to exchange Arsinoe for Ptolemy. Ptolemy was acting very meek and very keen for peace. Caesar agreed, but there was a trick. Ptolemy instead returned to command at the head of the army. Caesar, thankfully for him, had sent for reinforcements from his regional allies, and thousands of men from Pergamon in modern-day Turkey and Judea now marched into Egypt. Ptolemy raced southwards to deal with them, while Caesar was able to sail out of Alexandria and march down to rendezvous with his allies in the Nile Delta and face Ptolemy at the Battle of the Nile. Despite the name, it didn't take place on the water, but beside it. Ptolemy actually died as he was pushed back, trying to swim to one of his ships to get to safety. Legend says he was weighed down by his gold armour, which he refused to take off.
That's why you don't see swim hats made of gold now. So, meantime, the fact that Caesar and Cleopatra had, for a time, been living together under these odd circumstances meant that the people sort of saw Cleopatra and Caesar as in a marriage. Caesar didn't see himself as in a marriage because there wasn't ever a ceremony like you'd have in Rome. And in any case, Roman senators were forbidden from marrying foreigners at all, so it wouldn't have been recognised back home. He had a wife back there, and he had mistresses all over the place, and Cleopatra was just another one. But, you know, he was happy enough, it seems, when he was in Egypt. You know, what happens in Egypt stays in Egypt. For it to be perceived that way there, to the extent that when they had a son, Caesarion, he, I guess, tacitly approved the fact that that name was in place, that the boy that would end up becoming actually Egypt's last pharaoh, formed by this union between him and Cleopatra, would be named after him, sometimes called Little Caesar now, like the pizza place. that was temporarily a moment where Cleopatra had achieved everything. Like, not only had she saved herself and got back to the throne on this day, not only had she defeated her younger brother, who's now out the way, She had also created a union with Rome and a potential future king of Rome and Egypt in Caesarion. It was kind of incredible, but unfortunately it didn't go her direction.
Yeah, I mean, Cleopatra did the correct thing and adhered to Egyptian custom and married her remaining brother, Ptolemy the 14th, and Caesar was obviously already wed back home. But after Caesar's assassination in 44 BC, Cleopatra was left without her main political ally.
Worse than that, suddenly she's got the son of the person that they've just stabbed to death. She's thinking, this doesn't seem like such a shrewd political move anymore.
Exactly. And she knew from experience that the viziers of the person that she was wed to would potentially be plotting in the way that everyone tended to be plotting at this time. And so to secure her own son's succession, Caesarion's, she eliminated not only her rebellious sister Arsinoe and also her junior brother Ptolemy the 14th. And this obviously wasn't uncommon. You know, this is Egyptian dynastic politics. But, you know, with all of the internal threats removed, Cleopatra focused on ruling Egypt, which was the wealthiest nation in the Mediterranean and the last to maintain independence from Rome. And she did it really, really well. She was incredibly well regarded by her people. She's now looked back on as this sort of sexy seductress, but actually medieval Arab texts praised her many accomplishments as a mathematician, a chemist, and a philosopher, and as a politician. She was also multilingual. You know, she could speak between 5 and 9 languages, including her native.
Because she was royal. I mean, I do sometimes wonder with this, like, oh, she was a great intellect. It's like, it's written from the point of view of, and that's a surprise because she's a woman. But I mean, really, that's just because other women didn't have the opportunities she'd had to be educated.
That's true, but other royals had had the opportunity, for example, to speak the local language and they'd never really bothered, whereas she actually did bother to go ahead and learn Egyptian, Arabic, and also Hebrew.
How do you say carpet in Egyptian, she said. I don't want one of those. I want sexy lingerie.
Tomorrow.
That rock is always in the way. I'm fed up of swerving around it. Let's just get rid of it.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.